Welcome to the Filmmaker Mixer Podcast, the podcast by filmmakers for filmmakers. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined alongside my co-host, Jeff, as always. Jeff and I are writers and directors and passionate about the art of storytelling. Filmmaker Mixer is a creative hub where aspiring and established filmmakers come together to share experiences, insights, strategies, and inspiration.
And today we are chatting with director James Ginn. Andrew and I typically like to upload these episodes on Monday, so we are running a bit behind this week. As many of you know, we are deep into shooting a new feature, so it's been a little crazy lately. By the way, big shout out to our cast and crew, Phoebe and Austin and Blaine and the whole gang. They're doing an amazing job. But now let's settle back and listen to our chat with filmmaker James Ginn. Hello, everybody. This is the Filmmaker Mixer Podcast, and today we are chatting with James Ginn. He is a writer, a producer, a director, and a showrunner. James, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
No, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate your time. You know, one of the things I'm always curious about when I talk to people in the film business, writers and directors and actors, I'm curious how you got interested in being a filmmaker and a storyteller. Did you start like a lot of us do as a little kid, you know, loving movies, making movies, acting out plays? What was the defining moment that spurred you on as a child to do this crazy business?
Well, aside from watching movies that I loved, like whatever it was at the time, Blade Runner, I had a dad who was a painter, and he also dabbled in filmmaking. So I had the privilege growing up with cameras in the house, Bolex cameras in the house. He actually, in his studio where he worked every day, he had a projection set up, a projection booth set up with a screen, 16 millimeter projectors, Bolexes kicking around. So since I was a kid, I always had this stuff lying around. Also, just besides that, he was an artist. So I grew up seeing someone get up at 5 a.m. every day and go down and do their thing and live a life expressing themselves as an artist. So I believed in it. He was also a writer. I was just really inspired by my father. He gave me cameras when I was a kid. I was really fascinated by the technology of it. And then, of course, that was the 1970s and 1980s, where I spent a hell of a lot of time sitting in front of the television or going to theaters and watching movies. So by the time I was in junior high school, I was dabbling with film equipment. I was switching out my film projects for class projects for film projects and delivering little videos. When I was a teenager, you know, Betamax cameras were just starting to come out, and we had one around the house, a very early one, and I would shoot little videos with my friends in high school and submit them as class projects. So I started really early.
So was your dad a filmmaker, or did you just have this? I mean, how did he use the film with regards to his art?
He made experimental type art films.
Oh, interesting.
He was a very well-loved, well-known Canadian landscape painter. But he was also just a creative person in every way. And he woke up every day looking for ways to express himself. And film was one of the things that he just really loved. Photography as well. Like as a kid, I just grew up with him. He had a camera in his hand all the time, and he would snap pictures and he would use them for reference material for his painting. And even before I was born, he was fascinated with, I think when he was on his honeymoon with my mom in Europe, he took a Bolex camera with him to save money on photography, because he would literally go frame by frame. And after he passed away, I found these boxes of little cutout strips of 16 millimeter film frames that he had used as still photos of my mom in the 1960s.
Oh, interesting.
He would, the films that he made when I was a kid were really, again, experimental stuff, very art driven stuff. He did little doc mood pieces about artists, friends of his that he knew that he really loved and respected his work. So. So he just loved film as a medium altogether. Of course, it's really funny because over the years you realize that there's a huge difference between being a filmmaker and being an artist who goes down by themselves every day, and the only equipment they need is brushes and paints and an easel and a canvas, and nobody gives you a note or tells you what to do. Your notes are Your work is accepted and people enjoy it in the world.
So,
So,
what was the first film you made?
oh my goodness. I don't think we can count the stuff I was doing in high school. They're not to be spoken of. They're just fun things that I did with friends. I went to UBC Film. I grew up in Vancouver, Canada, and immediately after high school, I went traveling actually with a video camera and was, shooting stuff wherever I could. I had already planned to go to film school. I went to SFU first and then UBC Film, which is a really fantastic program. And the film I did there was somehow I managed to convince the rail company to let us shoot on their tracks and on their trains. And I wrote a little script about kids that get that something I'd actually ripped from the headlines or seen a story about a kid who had gotten stuck in the grain container of a freight train and taken away. And so I wrote a little story about that, a little 10, 12 minutes short, and we literally sat in the offices of CN Rail back in the day and said, "Hey, can we shoot our student film there?" And somehow we convinced them to let us use their stuff. I think they thought somehow it had a way of sending a message to kids not to do this, not to climb around on trains. So we shot a little film about trains.
That sounds cool. So once you decided you wanted to be a career, so that's you went the film school route then.
That's right, I did. UBC Film in my early 20s. My 20s were all about working in the industry and making short films like yourself. So I was working in post-production. Right out of film school, I went into post. I worked on set actually a little bit. I did AD work, PA work even. And then I worked in post-production, post-sound, music editing, sound supervising. I actually did a lot of soundtracks for indie films that were coming out of Vancouver at the time. And then at about 30, I went to a program in Canada called the Canadian Film Centre, which is an AFI style residency for directors coming out of a film that I'd made, independent film that I'd made in my late 20s that I'd just shot in my house. Got me into the CFC and made more short films there.
And so, what was the transition from getting out of school and actually getting to direct? I know you said sounds like you worked in post for a while, which is actually, you know what, before we go to that question, I'm curious, since you did so many different things, editing and post-production and music, that must have informed you as a director and a writer quite a bit to have all those other skill sets.
Yeah, for sure. The main part of that part of my career in my 20s was that I was working really closely with people that were 10 years ahead of me in their career path who were making independent feature films at the time. And this would have been in the 1990s. So people were, it was a whole different world in terms of how you got them made and financed. But I got to see firsthand, people in the last stage of their making their feature film and worked with them really closely. The advantage I had, I think, in that world was just that I was coming from a filmmaker, from the filmmaker side of things. So, oftentimes indie filmmakers would get to the, say, the sound process, the post-production process, and they were intimidated by it all. They were trying to get through the studio, the sound studios and the post houses. On a really low budget. So I just stepped in and said I would shepherd it through and sound supervise a feature film. But for me, it was a huge learning experience because I'm seeing how these films came together from the beginning to the end, very close with a director at the point where they're ripping their hair out over what they've made or whatever the case may be, right? It's that last moment when you push your baby out the door. And you get to be the person that puts the icing on the cake and polishes it up and makes it beautiful. So, yeah, I learned a ton, and I just worked really hard at it. I spent my 20s just working my butt off and trying to get involved in as many people's projects as possible. I had a very good friend in university at UBC who Lynn Stockwich, her name is. She had an indie film that a lot of my friends had worked on, and I started. She got me started on that because I basically would come in the middle of the night and Cutter soundtrack for free, just as a learning experience. And a lot of people launched their careers off of that little film that was called Kissed.
And were you also writing during this time? I mean,
I
were
was
you
writing
writing?
and making short films, so I kind of look at it like I was using my industry work to pay for the filmmaking habit and pay for the short films I was making. I was developing features and making shorts. And in my late 20s, I was doing everything I could. I was, pitching for music videos, and in my early 30s, I was doing some doc series work that'll come later. But late 20s was, funding a little short film by myself that I shot in my house on a long weekend with a volunteer crew. And then, back in the days where you're shooting on 16mm and posting and finishing on 16mm and screening it in 16mm at the festival. So, getting lucky in that zone means that there was a film that got acknowledged versus three that didn't get acknowledged, whatever the case may be. And that film that was, went around at the festivals takes you to the next step.
So, how did you make the transition into directing for TV and studio features and that kind
Well, that's amazing because that's a lot of luck that comes in there.
of thing?
Actually, a really good story. I went to the Canadian Film Centre, which a director's lab. As soon as you go to that program, instantly the stamp of that I work in post-production was erased. So I was officially unemployed the moment I left Vancouver and went to the film center. I was instantly an unemployed director. At the film center, I did a comedy short. It's called The Dog Walker, and it went around to the festivals. And just out of a pure stroke of luck, the CTV network in Canada had a mandate to support new emerging directors and writers. And they put together a series. It was called Robson Arms. It was an anthology series where they invited a certain number of new writers and a certain number of new directors to work on the show. Now, I got an interview for this, and when I prepped for the interview or went down to that interview for this job, this was again a year of unemployment after coming out of the film center, where you're like suddenly you're a director, but you don't have a job. The two producers, the producing director, his name is Gary Harvey, and the show-running writer named Susan Nielsen were. Two of the were the producers on the show that when I was 22 or 23, fresh out of film school, I was the PA on their show. So I literally cleaned up their waste baskets and stuff. And during that time, when I was just out of university film school, that was where I worked as an AD. I worked on set with them. At some point, I said, "Oh, I have to leave this job because I've got a film in the Montreal film that's going to take off." So. Point is, these people remembered me, and all the people that you work along the way are going to remember you. Those connections are everything. I went in and met with them, and they said, "Oh, James, we remember you, of course. It's been 10 years. You think about that from 22 to 21 to 31 or something that was the difference." And they hired me. The next hurdle, of course, is.
And what did they hire you as?
As a blocked, or so we were doing singles, so it would have been one episode of a half hour drama comedy for a Canadian TV network. And of course, the other brilliant thing and stroke of luck is that I got a brilliant script and it was brilliantly cast. And the show itself, with Gary and Susan at the helm of it, was a really nicely organized, sharply written, beautiful little piece of work. So I think my first day of shooting or the night of shooting, I didn't sleep at all.
Ha
I slept 2 hours. I think in my prep, I had literally already shot the whole show on a video camera beforehand
Oh,
so
wow.
that I had my shots memorized. I had the thing so prepped inside out that I could have shot it backwards and it wouldn't matter. But the point is that I got a great script with a great on a great production with great producers that just let me explore, and I didn't happen to fuck it up.
Well, that's good.
Which is the
And so that and then that gig just led to the next one and the next one and so on, that kind of thing.
Well, no, that's the trickiest part of anyone's career. Like you probably, I'm sure you've met with a lot of directors along the way, and there's that point where you that my early 30s were a huge push to just try to get yourself established. So that was the wheels started turning. And I just had to dig in and stay in the ring and keep fighting. And that was the period of time for the next 3, 4, 5 years where I was just saying yes to everything. I was taking whatever I could. I was pitching on music videos. I was doing little doc series that if I could get my hands on them, it would be all based on connections that again I had made in the industry up in Vancouver. Vancouver has a huge film industry and a great indie film scene. And I just got involved in that community as much as I could. I had been working there in the industry and making short films for the last 10 years. So the pro side was beginning to be accepting of my work, and the semi-pro side was I was wriggling away from. So yeah, I just did whatever I could. Doc series. The first gigs after that would have been kids half hour. Adventure series, some of them very low budget. Sometimes, we'd be shooting 12, 15 pages a day, and kids would be running around, they'd pumpkin at whatever, and they'd be freaking out because there'd be a green screen that's supposed to have a monster on it. Yes, tell them to hold that. And it was trial by fire. So that time in my career, I was just shooting whatever I could and trying to learn whatever I could. And I was also just the benefit of being in Canada and in Vancouver meant that I had a limited, there was a world that I was working in that was maybe less competitive.
And
Really less people after the same jobs, I guess.
so were you? Did you have an agent or a manager that was helping you get these gigs, or were you just out there hustling?
I had an agent. I've been working with the same Canadian agent for since then, so for 22 years or so. His name's Carl Lieberman. He's at the Characters, and I would have met him the year that I or the year I had a film in the festival in my late 20s. It would have got if my film went to the TIFF, and the when I went to the CFC, he probably came down to a screening and introduced himself. Plus, he was the agent to a number of other filmmakers from Vancouver that I knew, of course, because I'd come up through this indie filmmaking scene that was going on in that city at the time. It was really vibrant, and he had connections to a lot of the directors that were coming out of Vancouver at the time. So he took me on. But again, agent-wise, especially at that stage in your career, they're gonna do the best they can to get the open the doors, but you're the one that has to put the work in, and it's still up to you. If you get the door open, they're gonna push it the rest of the way, basically.
Well, I'm curious about something. You've been doing this for a number of years now. I'm curious, what did you do as a young independent filmmaker that you still do today, if there is something? And what did you do as a young independent filmmaker that you would never do today?
Oh my God, that's a great question. And there's so many different ways that we could talk for an hour about that stuff. But let's look at it creatively. The film that I referred to that I did in my late 20s was a little two-hander that I had written. It was probably about 8 pages long, and it was just about a woman that comes over to a guy's house after they've met a couple of days ago, and it was a little talking piece. And I cast it through some actors that I had met in the city. And I remember I had them over to my house to rehearse it. And I, during that rehearsal, not knowing what the hell to do with actors in a rehearsal at the time, I remember sitting and listening to them read the lines that I'd written. And I was hearing that they didn't sound the way they sounded in my head. So all my direction to them was about how to make them look the way I visualized something or imagined something or heard something in my head. The same went for the shooting. I had pictured the frame by frame, shot by shot, precisely how something was going to look. And I went about the shooting in a sort of a paint by numbers way where I tried to just recreate something in my head. Nowadays, after 100 episodes of television, features, shorts, all kinds of stuff, my work is, the process of my work is nothing like that. I still prep like crazy and come up with an extremely clear, solid, I storyboard everything, doesn't matter what it is, TV, even if people are talking over the shoulders, I draw pictures of it and I come up with a very precise imagining of what something looks like and sounds like. But I let it go as I go, and I let it organically grow and evolve, and I let the actors bring their own taste and personality and ideas to it, and I let their natural instincts come out. And yeah, so a huge shift, and it took years to learn the confidence to change my approach that way.
And so, are there any things you did as an indie filmmaker that you still do? Like, I mean, it sounds like you always storyboarded, I guess, and you still do that today.
Prep like crazy. I feel like the job is a privilege. The job is such a privilege to get a chance to do it every chance you get. Doesn't matter how long you've been doing it. So I started out thinking that I didn't come into it thinking I feeling like I was the bossiest person in the world that always could get their way just by saying the right thing. I didn't think I was the smartest, cleverest, most brilliant ideator of a filmmaker in the world. So my ammunition was the hard work I could put into something to get it ready, the amount of thought and the amount of process I could do. So I've never let go of that. I think it's always for me, just I love exploring different genres and different ideas and different tones. And I just think that every time you're doing something new, it's actually gonna it's a you're being challenged. And so I work really hard at the prep for it. We could talk forever about those types of prep, but the common thing to when I started to what I do now is I respect it and I work hard at it and I try not to let go of that, the spirit of this is the last chance you're going to ever get to direct something, better make it good. Right.
Well, you're also a showrunner, and I'm curious, how do you approach, a project as a showrunner versus, say, a director for hire for a given episode? Because as a showrunner, you're sort of shaping the tone. And I think you directed on Wild Cards, you directed the first episode, I think. Is that correct?
I was the pilot director. I want to maybe we got to be careful with the term showrunner because I don't ever consider myself. I think that word in my professional experience should be and is reserved for writers, writers in television. I'm an executive producer on television shows, so I don't know whether we can use the term in many different ways, but I like to refer to it as the person that's been hired to write, probably, but not always be the creator of the show, but oftentimes they're brought into a show that's been created elsewhere, and they run the storyroom, and then ultimately they're responsible for the overall, finished product look of the show. As an executive producer, I do a bunch of different things. One of them is being a producing director, which means you direct blocks of or episodes of a TV show, and but you're also overseeing the directorial aspects of the show, and that can vary depending on the show, depending on the project, what that involves.
When you say you're overseeing the director, how can I, what was he said? You said you
You oversee the directorial side of aspect
yeah,
of
what does that mean exactly? You're
a
shaping the tone of the show, or?
well, it can mean a whole bunch of different things. Some shows I would have come in on a second season. So there's already been a pilot director, there's already been whatever, eight other directors. There's a creator or a showrunner or executive producers in the writing room that have designed the show. My job is to carry it forward and make it better. Elevate it as much as I can or just make it better. But the job, the producing director job is after your own episodes are shot, sometimes you'll do multiple blocks along the way. then you are there. Again, it changes depending on the project, but you're there to just make sure production on a creative level is being done as best as it can. If you have a great AD team and great guest directors, there's actually very little you do. It's much like television directing is like you, it's a less is more thing. You are supporting the directors in their blocks. You're involved in their prep usually. You are often shooting a lot of the additional shooting that has to go on. TV shows will have double up blocks, second unit blocks, cleanup days, inserts, establishers, whatever it is that has to be shot that can't fit into the schedule of the episodic director's work, then producing director will often take charge of that. Also reshoot, sometimes that happens if the director isn't available to come back and do it. And then you're also involved a lot in post. So you will oversee things like the color, the sound, getting the cuts going through. That doesn't mean you're taking over what the writers do. The executive producers who are writers or the creator or the showrunner is still doing their finishing their cuts. And all depends on how involved they are. Sometimes they're not around a lot, and sometimes they're around all the time. And you just got to find, like anything, as a director in television, you figure out what the culture is on the show, and you find a way to make yourself extremely valuable. Right?
Well, on something like Wild Cards, when you direct the first episode, is it your job to use that episode to shape the tone of the film and the look of the film? Is that something that's on your shoulders or?
Oh yeah. Well, that job for me was a pilot director job. I'm an executive producer on the show by virtue of being the pilot director, which means I started several months before official production starts, or at least a couple of months before official production starts, and I'm part of the pitching, the design concept stage. Of course, the casting of the leads is a big part of your job as a pilot director. And really just rallying everybody towards a singular vision that the creator is trying to achieve, right? So your job in any directing job is to take something that's on a page and turn it into something that's on a screen. And when you get the privilege of doing that for the pilot of a TV show, then you're essentially doing what you would be doing in the film that you're prepping right now, or a short film that you've done, or a feature film, whatever it is. You're starting from the ground up with nothing. So how that carries forward is also partly your job, but it's that would be a good part of the job of a producing director. So you'd say the pilot director set up this sort of list of rules or concepts or a style, or and you've created documents that help communicate those ideas to the future directors, and you carry it forward as best you can.
So I'm curious about something. We've talked to a lot of actors about this. It's their job as an actor to bring a character to life. They're reading the character that's on the page, the dialogue and the descriptions and the action direction. But still they have to interpret that into something that's visual and alive. I'm curious, as a director, do you have a process when you're reading a script? Or is it just intuitive? When you're reading the script and you're thinking, I need to turn this into something visual and something, tangible that we can watch. Do you just do that naturally because you've done it so long? Or do you have a process where you're penciling in the script and coming up with your shots? I mean, is there a process to
I have a huge process.
it?
And it's actually something that I almost follow it. I follow it religiously in order to just in order to go through a bunch of stages for myself in learning and memorizing and getting a feel for the script. Now, of course, it's very different for a pilot versus a producing director gig versus a guest director show. But as a guest director, say for example, you're going to get a script. Hopefully, you're going to get a script 3 or 4, maybe a week, maybe 2 days before your first day of official prep. That time for me is the most valuable time in the process, the creative process of being a guest director. simply because it's the time that you're in your office like that with the script by yourself and you're reading it through, getting familiar with the material and imagining it, picturing it in your head. The first day you start on prep is going to be a whirlwind of meetings and shopping lists, and you want to have your ideas solidified. My process for that is, yes, I do a note. I read through the script and I'll write whatever comes to mind. It could be, how are we going to do this or how are we going to do that? It could be things about story. It could be things about theme. A lot of times it's just generally what thematically, what does this story mean to me? I'm usually trying to dig out experiences from my own life that I can use to connect to it and maybe communicate ideas to people with. Often just a lot of technical stuff that I'll write down, knowing that in a few days I'm going to have to go and lead a creative team of people to make things happen fast. And I'll do a breakdown much the way a first AD breaks script down. Well, I'll just write out the scenes and get a feel for what each scene is. And that just helps me out probably again just to memorize things and get a feel for how the story has been constructed and also get a feel for what locations are where, because all that stuff's going to come up really fast. And then I need about 3 or 4 solid days at home by myself where I build a playlist of music that makes sense, that's playing in the background. I sit in my office and I'll do a storyboard pass on the whole thing, even if I don't know locations, don't know what the casting is. I'll literally draw it out in its most ideal imagined version. And then as I go along and I have to, if you're standing on set like your business partner is doing location scouting right now, they're standing in a field looking around and trying to figure out if that field is the right field for them. For me, that knowledge or that instinct comes from having sat down and figured out some way that this show can be visualized. So then I'm always sort of referencing back, and that's where the intuition, the word you use, that's where the intuition comes from for me. I have to grow it by myself in my office.
Well, I've got another question. Since you write and you direct, I want to go back to when you were a young director and young writer, and as you were coming up, how did you find your voice as a director or as a writer? I mean, because I do think that oftentimes when you get started, you're trying to figure those things out. You're making your short films, you're writing these ideas, that idea, and then somewhere along the way, you sort of come into your own and you kind of bring a voice to your own work. Did that happen for you? And if so, were you aware of it happening?
It did happen for me. I don't recall it being a thing where I was deliberately making a choice. So it's really interesting. I think this works differently for everybody, and it's a really great question. I fell into the things that were the most the easiest things for me to get excited about, right?
You mean like
So
an idea or a.
terms of ideas, yeah. So the example I'm thinking about is when I was at the Canadian Film Center. The great thing about doing a program like that is you're forced to commit to your ideas really quickly, and you just have to act on whatever. During that time, I shot horror stuff. I shot, genre stuff. I shot very dark drama stuff, and I did some weird comedy stuff. At the time when we reached the end of the program and I had to pitch a short that was sort of the prize at the end of the program, where you're going to get a very nice, like a substantial amount of money to do a nice short. I was just really interested in a particular idea that was my comedy short idea. It was a character that I'd kind of developed with an actor that I was working with. And so I combined the idea with things that I'd found in the news or things that I was stories that I couldn't stop thinking about in the news and turned it into a little short. And so next thing you know, I've got a comedy short on my hands. Did not ch choose that. It was just what was my heart was following at the time. And I can say that throughout my career, it's always been the same thing. It's like I take great pride in wanting to in exploring different genres, trying to get good at everything, trying to be versatile in my voice. I think it's been a blessing for me just because I can explore different things. The virtue of me at that time in my career doing comedy is that it happened to be a really great way to break into half-hour TV because half-hour TV is comedies, and it's not always, but at the time there was a lot of these little half 22-minute comedies, drama comedies, was very similar to my short. And yeah, so I established myself in television directing, shooting comedies for the first sort of eight years or so. Just happened that way. Does that answer your question?
I think so. I think so. I'm always curious because it does seem like I'm not sure how to explain exactly, but as a writer or a director, at some point you just feel, like I said earlier, you just kind of come into your own. And it sounds like that you started to find that voice early on. Well, I'm curious about another thing. When it comes to the genres, like you said, you like to do a lot of different things. Is there any one genre you haven't worked in that you really want to work in?
Everything that I haven't done is something that you want to do, right? So genre-wise, I don't, I've never made like a long form, very serious, dark horror, very generic horror film. I think it'd be really fun to do it. It's to me these the genre world, like I've dabbled it in all kinds of ways. Even comedy horrors, like that show we were talking about before with David Winning did. It's to me when you set up this sort of the rules of a genre, it gives you more freedom to play in the middle of it. It's you play better tennis in a tennis court concept, right? When you have the lines where the ball has to, land, then it's all about how good your swing and your hit is, and that's really fun for me. It's you know exactly what you're trying to deliver. Yeah, Wild Cards is a great example of that because we set out with the intention of fitting it very nicely into a pocket. We knew the genre that we wanted to be. We knew the tone of it. We knew what we wanted to deliver to the audience. It was never a question of what the personality of the show was. We had some very strong references, and we could work inside that box and just do our best to make it as quality as we could.
Well, what are you up to these days? What's next on your plate?
I'm actually looking forward to the next season of Wild Cards. It's going to come up very soon for us. I just finished A Good Doctor, which is a show that I literally last week finished. A Good Doctor is a show I've done for a few years. Really fun show to do. It's just a bunch of really experienced writers, amazing cast, a really familiar gang, the happiest crew in Vancouver because they, work on a show that's predictably inside and when it's raining all the time. It's a show I've done for 3 or 4 years, and I just love the project. So it's been my last month.
And if people want to find out more about you and your work, how can they track you down? Are you like an Instagram guy or do you have a
I need to be better at Instagram.
website?
You can sir, I'll definitely respond to anybody on Instagram for sure. James Genn. IMDb, my website or Instagram for sure. Reach out anytime.
Well, very good. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. I've enjoyed having you on the show. I'm glad you're
Great.
enjoying the nice weather there in Los Angeles. We're having the same thing here in Austin. So, yeah, stay in touch. And if you ever come down, do you ever get down to Austin, like South by or Austin Film
Oh my
Festival
God, I'd
anymore?
love to. Is that an invitation? Sure, I do.
Sure. Hey, you got a place to stay if you need one.
Thank you.
Well,
And
very good.
best of luck with your film that you're prepping right now.
I appreciate that.
When
Yeah,
does that
me.
start?
On 2 weeks. Yeah,
Oh
2 weeks.
my God, wow.
Yeah, so right around the corner. So, all getting everything all organized, and hopefully we'll hit the ground running.
Yeah, good for you. Best of luck. Breakaway.
Appreciate that. Well, stay in touch, and you're welcome to come back on the show anytime. The door's always open. So yeah, it was great
Great.
chatting with you, and definitely stay in touch.
Thank you. You too, man. Thank you so much.
All right, man.
And
We'll talk to you soon.
take care. Bye now.
Thank you for listening to the Filmmaker Mixer podcast, a podcast created and hosted by filmmakers Jeff Stolen and Andrew Lamping, and produced by Melody Lopez.
Our theme song was composed by Stephen D. Bennett.
Make sure to follow or subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us on, and stay tuned for future episodes.